Last week, Steve introduced the new topic.
It's life, Jim, but not as we know it. Not as we know it.
I'm sorry, I couldn't resist. No, I couldn't. So I've kept the theme going, and as I move on to the next chapter of James, chapter 2, and the theme of faith and works, and probably his most contentious bit of passage, which we'll read together now, and see what James has to say before I start waffling too much. So, what good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, "Go in peace, keep warm and well fed," but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. But someone will say, "You have faith, I have deeds. Show me your faith without deeds, and I will show you my faith by my deeds." You believe that there is one God. Good. Even the demons believe that and shudder. You foolish person, do you want evidence that faith without deeds is useless? Was not our father Abraham considered righteous for what he did when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see that his faith and his actions were working together, and his faith was made complete by what he did. And the scripture was fulfilled that says, "Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness." And he was called God's friend. You see that a person is considered righteous by what they do and not by faith alone. In the same way, was not even Rahab the prostitute considered righteous for what she did when she gave lodging to the spies and sent them off in a different direction? As the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without deeds is dead. So as I said, and Steve alluded to last week, James's letter has been somewhat controversial over the years. Anybody tell me who this is? No one there at the moment.
There he is.
He's come up. Anybody know who that is? Correct. I haven't got any chocolates at all. So Martin Luther said something quite interesting, although I disagree with it. Again, it's coming. It's been really slow today. Well, he said, "Therefore, St. James's epistle is really an epistle of straw compared to these others, for it has nothing of the nature of the gospel about it." I don't think he could be any more wrong on that, because I think James is writing, and Steve said it last week, it's to help the dispersed Christians actually put the gospel into action. It's not a text of particular complexity. Like many others, it doesn't require much contextualizing. It is perhaps, and if anybody remembers them, the Ladybird how-to guides. It's perhaps the Ladybird how-to guide. Go on again. It's coming. So if anybody remembers the Ladybird how-to guides, I kind of had this, when I was writing this, I suddenly thought of them, and I thought, James is like the Ladybird how-to guide for the gospel. How to put it into practice. I'm going to possibly not worry too much about the size, but there you go, it's come up. And then I've doctored a cover in a minute. So in James chapter 2, we see James, again, being very succinct and precise in what he is writing. And we're going to focus on the faith and deeds bit. And it opens with a very blunt challenge. Sorry, I'm really struggling without my teeth. I had the other one out, the root out, the other week, and it's like I've gone backwards. But next Friday, I will have teeth for Christmas. So, yes. Well, a bit early, but yes, I'm going to have teeth at Christmas time, which is going to be wonderful. Yeah, my two front teeth. It is, isn't it? So he opens with a very blunt challenge. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? As we all sit here today, I would hope that we all have faith. For some, it may be stronger than others. For some, it may be faltering. And that's fine. James is challenging those early Christians and us about what they are doing with the faith that they have. The way he words the question is very challenging, because he makes it very clear at the end of the passage, if we claim to have faith but do nothing with it, then that faith is dead. So this challenge has caused quite a lot of controversy. It seemed to go against the ideas espoused by Paul, that we are saved by faith alone. The issue here is that there are, in my view, two misunderstandings. Paul doesn't say we are saved just by faith. He clearly says that there is a working out of our faith in Galatians 5:22-23. Genuine faith bears fruit. I think the slides are going slow. Just don't worry. There it is. The second misunderstanding is that James is saying that we can somehow be saved by our works. Again, this is a simplification of what he's saying. Next slide. Oh, I think I've missed that slide. I have missed that slide. Oops. So I was going to have a picture of Duncan Bannantyne up there, and because he famously had an encounter with Jesus and sort of rejected it. But he's also had an OBE for all his charitable works, and all the good works that he's done may have got him an OBE, but they can't save him because he rejected that. So we can't earn our place in heaven. I think it's important to be quite clear. We can't just do lots of really good things and somehow get into heaven without having faith. You know, we can't just donate more and more money to good causes and buy our way in. What James is doing here is talking to believers. He's not talking to people that need to be converted. He's talking to people with faith. And he's saying to them, if you have that faith in Jesus, then you need to put it into action. I had a little analogy here, which I think Steve will agree with. So year 7, I go up to Dean Magner, and they've told me that I'm going to get a 9 in my maths. And I believe it. So I just don't bother going to lessons, because they've told me I'm going to get a 9. I don't do my homework. You know, yeah. Am I going to get a 9? Steve?
No.
No. Again, my faith is misplaced if I just believe that it's going to happen. I have to do my homework.
Yes,
yes sir. I have to turn up to class. If I just sit there because I've been told I'm going to get it, I'm very misguided. I'm not getting a 9. I wasn't going to get a 9 anyway. James' assertion is completely borne out in the Gospels. In Matthew 25:31-46, I'm going to read a lot again. Then the king will say to those on his right, come you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison or go to visit you? The king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me. And they will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty, or a stranger, or needing clothes, or sick or in prison, and did not help you? He will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me. So here we see that those who have helped the needy, those turned away, are not those that don't believe. They acknowledge Jesus as Lord. And yet they didn't do what he told them to do in the gospel, and therefore they are sent away. So James is right, and he gets it from Jesus, because Jesus said that we need to do stuff. James is encouraging the faithful. It's a call to action. And the way I read it is to perhaps to correct a bit of a misunderstanding that somehow we could rest on our laurels that we had faith. He's putting out an argument and makes the case that faith is an action, not just some ethereal thought. He's quite blunt. He calls that type of faith dead. Our initial faith in Jesus is the start, not the end. Once we profess our faith in Jesus, we are saved. But if we stop there, then that faith is useless. It has to be put into action for it to be real. James says, "You foolish person, do you want evidence that faith without deeds is useless?" He then uses the example of Abraham and how he had to put his faith into action when asked to sacrifice Isaac. And from that, God rewards Abraham. You see that his faith and his actions were working together, and his faith was made complete by what he did. He also uses the example of Rahab, who was made righteous, again, by what she did. So, as I said, James is, I think, you know, and let it speak for itself at the very beginning there, it's very succinct, it's very direct. And he's calling the Christians that he's writing to back then, to almost 2,000 years ago, to action. But I think his writing is just as pertinent today as it was then. It's telling us to get up off our bottoms and do stuff. He's saying, if you believe in Jesus, go and do what he told us to do. He doesn't want empty platitudes. He wants action. He starts with that. Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm, how kind. But it's pointless. Because if you don't look after their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. I don't think we could get any more blunt. Now, it's really fantastic that Ruth spoke about Breathe today, because when I was doing this, I was thinking, actually, we do quite a lot as a church, and people here do quite a lot. I mean, the stuff that Breathe is doing is fantastic. That's putting it all into action. It's amazing. You know, we've been helping with the shoeboxes at the moment, and again, we're putting that into action because that is giving such joy and benefit and hope, probably, to millions of, well, not millions of children, but loads of children, tens of thousands, and there's lots of different organisations that do it. You know, and lots of people from the church have been getting involved. We've got the youth club, which meet next Friday. We've got Sprouts, coffee mornings. And we do so much, and it's about putting our faith into action. And we need to keep it up, because as we lit the candle of hope today, those things bring so much hope to people, because it's somewhere to come and talk to at the coffee mornings. They may not talk to anybody because they're alone for the rest of the week. The kids, it gives them somewhere that's safe and warm, especially at this time of year, on a Friday evening. You know, Sprouts is a time for mums to relax and things like that. And it is so important that we give hope, because as Jesus said in the gospel, when we do it to the least of them, we do it for him. And I think that is the thing that James is really getting to the nub of, is it's about doing stuff because we're doing it for Jesus. So thank you very much for listening to me, and I hope that I've been helpful and not too heretical.